Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Do you suffer from bill shock when you open your phone bill? What are your thoughts on early termination fees? If you have a disability, are there regulations that require communications devices and services to be accessible? Well, we're going to talk about these issues and an awful lot more. My guest is Joel Gurin. He's the Bureau Chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission. Joel, it's nice to see you again.
Oh, good to see you, Shirley. Thanks for having me here.
Well, you know, there's so many things that are going on at the FCC that I think we really do need to update people as what their rights are, how they can access your organization. And, you know, I have to say, you all do a fabulous job of responding to consumers.
Well, thank you.
We hear from consumers that you do. So that's really a feather in your cap, because there are a lot of issues with communications. But the old issues that we used to deal with, like slamming and cramming, well, cramming is still around, but slamming is pretty much gone, isn't it? That's when your phone was changed with your phone service was changed without your consent.
It's not totally gone, but it's definitely on the decrease, because there have been so many changes in the way long distance service is provided.
Mm-hmm.
Cramming, though, is actually on the increase.
Is it really?
Yeah, and cramming, you know, is when a third party charge shows up on your phone bill without your authorization. It's mostly been a problem for landlines, but we're starting to see it for wireless as well, for things like ringtone services, all kinds of different services.
So it's really important for consumers to check those bills and make sure that all those little charges, because generally aren't these cramming charges, they're small, hoping to escape your notice. But, you know, the question that consumers ask, well, why is my phone company billing me for something that's not legitimate? Can you explain that?
Right. It's the best advice, as you just said, is check your phone bill. And if you have a question, call your phone company right away. They should be able to help you sort it out if it's a charge that you
But aren't they obligated? Aren't they obligated to bill third party services to their customers?
You know, that's actually not as clear legally,
really?
as you sometimes hear. We're looking at the whole question of cramming. The Federal Trade Commission is too. And we're really going to be seeing what we can do to help straighten this all out.
Well, you know, it's not your area, but we're seeing it also in credit cards, where credit card charges are being put through for small amounts, and it's amazing.
These small amounts. I mean, there are shops that their business is getting these charges on your bill, and it may only be a couple of bucks for you. There was one case recently that I think added up to about $19 million over a few years.
Isn't that amazing?
These small charges really do add up, and we've also been hearing of charges that are more significant, more in the $10 or more range.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a problem.
So keep an eye on them. Okay, we talked about bill shock. Now, your goal is to make sure that when we get our phone bill, we know what to expect.
That's right. What we've found, both through our own complaints, through a study that we did, now Consumers Union has done a study as well, tens of millions of people in this country are suffering from bill shock, which is what you experience when you get your phone bill and all of a sudden it's tens or hundreds or in some cases even thousands of dollars more than it was last month and more than you expected. So a lot of the causes of this, there are many different causes, but a lot of times the situation is that you went over your plan limit without knowing it, or international roaming if you're in another country and you start racking up minutes for data or for voice calls. So what we're looking at is a proposed set of rules that would require wireless companies to tell you when you're about to head into that kind of dangerous territory.
Well, now, your phone will tell you usually that you're roaming or sometimes, but you won't know that you've been over your plan or whatnot.
That's
so
right.
There is some consumer responsibility here as well to keep track of what they're doing.
Well, the whole goal that we have is to help consumers be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
What we've found in talking, we've talked to all the wireless companies about this. We've looked at their websites. We've talked to consumer groups also. A lot of the companies are taking some steps that are positive, but there isn't yet a kind of clear guarantee. What we really feel is that whatever cell phone company you're with, whatever plan you're on, whether you're using voice or text or data, you should get alerts that tell you when you're getting close to a situation that's going to put you in overage or when you're roaming internationally.
Is that easy for a communications company to do?
Well, the fact that many of them have done it already indicates that it certainly is doable. But, you know, mm-hmm. some will do it for voice, but not for data.
Sure.
Some will do it for one plan, but not for another. We're just trying to, our proposed rules would make it much more uniform.
So, and but for the consumer, you just need to keep on top of it as well.
You need to keep on top of it, but it needs to be easy to do.
Yeah, right.
You
exactly.
Know, there are ways to check your how many minutes you're using now, but sometimes it's easier than other times. We certainly don't think somebody should have to hunt on a website. The easiest thing is if you get an alert on your phone, then it's right there and you can use the information right away.
Well, they certainly don't mind sending you a text message trying to tell you services.
That is, we have observed that as well.
So we got to keep that in mind.
Absolutely.
Early termination fees have gotten a lot of discussion, and that is when you want to decide you want to change your service, your contract before the time is up. In some parts of me say, well, it's okay for the phone company to be charging, cell phone companies to be charging this because they give you a phone. Other parts of me say, well, if you're 9 months and 10 days or 10 months into a plan, you shouldn't have to pay the whole fee. Is that where you're going on to early termination fees?
Well, like as with Bill Shock, our whole goal here is to make information really clear and available to consumers. So we're not about to tell phone companies whether they can charge an early termination fee or how big it should be or anything. Well, that's we're just not going to go there. But what we do think is that they have to be much clearer about telling people up front what their early termination fee is. And I can tell you with the wireless companies, there's a lot of variation now. Some companies will tell you the early termination fee somewhere in the fine print that's in the second paragraph of the thing on your receipt.
Page 15.
When you sign your receipt, that receipt serves as your two-year contract. But we talked to another wireless company that said, you know what, when we have people sign a contract, we have a little checkbox that says, I'm checking this off, you know, to acknowledge that I know my early termination fee is such and such. And they feel that's a best practice. So again,
I think that's a great idea.
Again, we're seeing within the industry, there's a lot of variation. What we'd like to do is move everybody towards what are best practices. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at early termination fees. These have actually shown up not just for wireless, by the way, but also for satellite plans, for some of the cable and, internet plans that people have in their homes. And I think there's a lot of shifting now as to whether early termination fees will or won't become common for those kinds of services.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, we want to make sure people know what's going on.
We want some consistency and some clarity.
Absolutely.
I would totally agree on that. The termination fees, you know, in some ways make sense because of the services that you're not fulfilling a contract, but yet at the same time, how big should they be? And I think some companies have moved to prorating them.
Actually, in the wireless industry, I think they're almost all prorated.
Are they good?
But the thing that you have to realize is if you have a $240 early termination fee over 24 months, it's not necessarily going to go down by $10 a month. It might go down $5 a month for the first 20 months and then drop off rapidly at the end. So we think there are also things to look at in terms of how well people understand the prorating as well.
Okay. All right. Well, let's just take a short pause here. And to identify ourselves, you're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joel Guerin. He's the Bureau Chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission. And we're talking about a lot of consumer issues that are in before the FCC, how they help you and the things that you need to know to protect yourself when you're using communications devices and services. One of the things that I've seen over the past few years is an increase in services for the disabled.
Yes.
And I believe you all actually have some regulations. What is it, the 21st century?
Yes, there was landmark legislation passed recently. It's the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're interested, if you just Googled 21st Century Communications Act, I'm sure you would find it. This was passed. This is in some ways some of the most sweeping legislation helping people with disabilities since the ADA was passed about 20 years ago. So it's very significant for people. And what it does is it says that people with speech or hearing or visual disabilities or other kinds of physical disabilities have to have access to communication services, not just the traditional services like telephone service, where a lot has been done over the last decade or two, but also to broadband. You know, broadband is becoming high-speed internet, is becoming the way that everybody communicates. It's the way we do business. It's the way we do education. So the act is very much about ensuring that people with disabilities have access to those services too. And one of the great things about the Act is that it sets out these guidelines at a time when companies are still developing new kinds of advanced communications technology. So rather than having to go back and try to retrofit what they've done, there's a real opportunity for them to really build in these kinds of services
going forward. So it's a road plan.
It is exactly a road plan. And a lot of the implementation of this Act falls to the FCC. So we have an office in my bureau headed by Greg Leibach and by Karen Peltz-Strauss, our deputy bureau chief, both of whom have just tremendous background.
Oh, Karen is an old friend of mine, and I've served on many committees with her having to do with communications and disabilities.
Well, was actually, when she was outside the commission, she played a very important role in getting the Act passed. She's joined us about a year ago, and now she gets to help implement it. So it's very nice follow-up.
But some of the things that I've seen are, for example, telephones that have been developed with larger numbers for seniors.
That's right.
You know, I mean, we're not going to consider seniors disabled, but seniors may have some visual issues that they really, perhaps their vision is not as good as it used to be, and they're simpler phones as well.
That's absolutely part of the same trend. And you're seeing a number of companies even before the Act.
It's smart business.
It is smart business. You know, we're all getting older. We're not getting any younger, as people keep reminding me. So that's all true.
You might be getting older, but I have brand new knees.
Well, there you go. No, a lot of these advances also can be useful for people who may not have a disability but are looking for a simpler way to use communication services, a more accessible way. It's really a benefit all around.
I heard a friend of mine recently who's a very technology savvy person, but he said, you know, I just want a phone. I don't want a device. I want a phone. And he was talking about how difficult it was to find a phone.
Well, that's part of it. Sometimes simplicity helps. The other example that we talk about all the time is, you know, when closed captioning came in, it was really thought of as a service for people who are deaf. I'm not sure anybody envisioned that one day there would be a lot of people on treadmills in the gym who were listening to music and watching TV with closed captioning. But that's just one example of the way that these kinds of advances and innovations end up actually, in many cases, helping the whole population.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you are so totally right. And it's great to see the directions that we're moving in terms of accessibility for everybody. I mean, it's just for all of us, no matter what our concerns are. Now, a little bit earlier, you touched on broadband. Broadband meaning how fast we get somewhere on the internet, I think. That's probably my very simplistic definition. But there's fast and there's faster. Why do I need faster if I'm fast? I mean,
well, we're looking at that whole question of broadband speed. You know, we did a survey a while back that showed that 80% of people who have broadband, and broadband you can think of as just really being high speed internet. 80% of people who had high speed internet didn't have any idea what speed they were getting or what speed they were supposed to get. It's all megabits, megabytes. Most people
just
have no idea. So what we're doing now, we've actually been working for several months now with a group of folks from the different industries that are affected by this, and we're really trying to figure out together what's the best way to talk to the public about broadband speed. It's an interesting thing. People tend to think that faster is always better. And if you read the ads, up until a while ago, all of the major carriers, or at least most of them, all said their service was blazing fast. And then one of them... until they caught on fire. And then one of them about a month ago said, no, it's not blazing fast. We provide breakneck speed. So, you know, that's the measure of speed that we're dealing with. It's not really very precise. What we're finding is that, you know, you could pay significantly more per month for the fastest speed, and most of the broadband providers have different tiers of service. You can pay less for slower or more for faster. For a lot of people who are basically just doing basic email or things like that, a slower, cheaper speed may be perfectly fine. So we think that one of the things that'll happen as people understand this better is that it really opens up the market for companies to provide different kinds of services at different price points, at different speeds, and really help everybody figure out what's right for them.
If you're just using it for emails, for example, you don't need something that's blazing fast or breakneck speed or anything else.
No, you need something that's fast enough, which is not actually something I've seen in ads, but it could
be.
It's fast enough service.
That's right. Yeah. Well, now, you do have a website where people can check to see what their actual speed is, right?
Yes. Actually, the best place to go for all of the things that we're talking about is fcc.gov/consumers.
Okay.
And what you do, if you go there, you'll see it highlights all our consumer issues. There's a place you can click to find out all about broadband speed, and there is a self-test that you can do. Measuring your own broadband speed can be a little bit complicated because it's affected not just by the speed the company delivers, but by all kinds of things within your house. Like if you have an old computer, if you have an old router, if you have three kids who are all online at the same time, if you're online at a peak time. But it is a good idea to check and see what you're getting. And if you feel that your speed is way less than what you thought you were getting, you should call the company that's providing your broadband and talk to them.
Do you think most consumers know what they're getting?
No, but I think people are going to start
getting smarter,
about it. And I think, sometimes it's just intuitive. If you're trying to load down a video and it's very slow, that could very well be because of the site the video is coming from, or it could be a problem with your service. More and more people, by the way, are actually moving towards video in particular. So I think the need for speed is going to increase.
It's going to increase.
Time.
Let's just take a short pause here and let people know they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Joel Gurin. He's the Bureau Chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau in the Federal Communications Commission. And we're talking about all the consumer issues that the commission deals with, the ways they help consumers, and so on. So, yeah, okay. So you can go to the website. It's just fcc.gov/consumer. Find all kinds of information there. As a matter of fact, you can find a link to your website to file a consumer complaint, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Tell consumers what are some of the issues that you would want them to complain to you about?
Well, any issue that you have with your communication service provider, With one caution, which is we always are going to ask if you've tried to work it out with the company first. So, we always say, don't come to us first. Go to the company first, see what you can do. But if that doesn't work, then come to us and let us know what's going on. We get a lot of issues around billing, a lot of issues around fees. Those are, I think, really some of the major categories. And what we do, which I think a lot of people don't know, is we actually we will mediate. If somebody comes to us and says, I have this huge charge on my bill, I talk to my cell phone company, they won't remove it. We will really try to help work it out with the company.
Now, there's one thing that consumers find confusing, and I used to find it confusing until I asked you all about a half a dozen times, and that is whether you file a formal or an informal complaint. And consumers used to say to us, well, I don't want to file an informal complaint. I want them to take it serious. Define the difference for us, because you do take it serious.
Yes. In informal, all that means is that you're not really filing a legal charge. A formal complaint is where you think there's really been essentially a violation of the law. So we should probably call it something like other than informal. We should probably call it extra legal, but still important to us or something.
Right.
But believe me, we take the informal, the quote unquote informal complaints very seriously. We have about 80 people whose full-time job is to handle these complaints. And the one concern we have is we're not sure that enough people know about it. So we're trying to get the word out.
Well, we want to help, because I think you do a fantastic service. I've let our listeners know that I've served on your Consumer Advisory Committee since its inception and used to chair it. And one of the things that we've had is reports from the heads of that office. And I've been very impressed with what they've been able to do, and from the reports we hear back from consumers that we send there.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad to hear that. The other thing that people should know, by the way, is, as you said, fcc.gov/consumers is a way to find us online. You can also call 1-888-CALL-FCC, or that translates to 1-888-225-5322, call FCC, and that way you can... that's a good way to find out information. And if you want to file a complaint, you can do it that way.
Now, one thing that consumers are confused about is the do not call registry.
Yes.
And you all do not administer that, even though you were part of the installation of it. But the Do Not Call registry goes to the Federal Trade Commission.
That's correct. Right. And we handle the Do Not Fax complaints, of which we get
can
a lot of those.
Can we ever get rid of those faxes?
That's a tough thing. We do what we can, but it's not easy. It's not easy. But Do Not Call, you can actually get to the Do Not Call list through our website as well. Mm-hmm. And we certainly encourage people to sign up if that's something they want.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I was the first person to join, almost anyway.
Right. Right.
Okay, let's talk about some of the other things that are available on your site. You have a kids area.
We have a kids area.
So much fun.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. Yeah,
have you played the games, Joel? You got to go in there.
I can't say I have. I will now. But we do a lot of stuff for kids, and we're increasingly doing stuff for parents. Parents are very concerned about safety online, and we're giving them some information on that. We're also looking for ways to help parents and teens know about innovations that could be helpful to them. Our chairman has now made a couple of appearances at high schools that are technical high schools, where there's a lot of really good thinking and a lot of good stuff that these kids are doing to develop applications or to find new ways to use broadband.
Well, you have your website for kids. Is really neat because it has different levels, teenagers, yes. Kids, preteens, and so on, different levels of games. I'm kind of down at the bottom of those things. They require a lot of manual dexterity, let me tell you.
I know. You see, that's why I don't even try.
Hand-eye coordination is absolutely essential. But also, for example, there was a section in there on the development of the fax machine.
Mm-hmm.
And other interesting things and put into really terms that kids can understand. And it's fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
We got to make sure. I've been promoting that on WTOP, let me tell you, because I think it's great. I think the more parents know about the internet and the more their kids know, the better off they are, especially start them young.
And we definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, are there any other things that we've left on? We've got a couple of 3 minutes here.
Well, one new thing, which I think we know a lot of people are interested in, is we are now working on a Truth in Caller ID set of rules. So Congress passed an act last December giving the FCC authority to take action on this, and we have until the end of June to get rules out there. So we actually just recently issued proposed rules in this area. But there are companies now that you can go online and you can essentially hide your caller ID behind some other number. So there are people now who are pretending to be banks. They're pretending to be courts, and they'll call you and say, you missed jury duty, please give us your Social Security number. So these proposed rules would ban any fraudulent use of these what they're calling caller ID spoofing sites.
Right.
And now I think that'll be a big help to people, I think.
I've heard people have said, well, there are some legitimate uses for not having your phone number registered. For example, if you are an abused spouse.
That's absolutely correct.
And there will be some exceptions.
Yes. The rule is specifically about fraudulent use of this kind of masking of your ID. So those kinds of uses where somebody has a legitimate reason not to want their phone number to show up, that would be protected here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that does make sense. But yes, the spoofing issue, I mean, people will say, well, I get emails from our listeners, and they'll say, well, you know, I got this email, and it was from my bank, and I was afraid not to respond. Well, call them. Don't respond.
I've got to say.
I mean, call. Not email. Call.
I look and work on these issues all the time. I got an email like that almost fooled me. They can be very realistic looking, and what you always have to remember is, you know, you just don't give out all that personal information from somebody asking for it unless you know exactly who they are and you're sure that this is.
I meant to say from calling, but also the same thing happens with emails.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's true, actually, emails.
You know, nothing is safe anymore. It seems to me do have to be vigilant, don't you?
Well, that's what we're here for.
And report the crooks to the FCC.
Absolutely.
Oh, not necessarily crooks. If there are issues. Billing issues and your concerns. So you all are always very interested.
We are here to help, and we have a lot of people who are really expert at helping. We would love to hear from more and more consumers and do what we can.
Joel, thank you so much for being with us. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest has been Joel Gurin, Bureau Chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission. Thank you for being with us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.